People who didn't know Rav Lichtenstein well, who were exposed to him solely through his articles, his shiurim, his public lectures, and his public persona, are surprised when they hear about his deep emotional intelligence and his deeply held emotions, not just the understandings of emotions. And they express themselves, obviously, in the interpersonal relationships with his Talmidim, those who were Zocha to spend years and years with him. Obviously with his family, and to a degree the Talmidim were able to eavesdrop or view the family relationships, especially when he was younger, and he lived in yeshiva for Shabbosos and for Yom Tovim, were able to view them without obviously being in any ways invasive. He wasn't someone who flashed his emotions, and he certainly didn't share his emotions immediately. Wasn't someone that we would call charismatic, whose emotions were very clear and whose spirit was felt very potently in an instant. I hear a lot of times people today confusing emotions with emotionalism. People can have very deep emotions, very deep spirituality, which is very different from emotions, obviously, but not choose not to or be incapable of showing them or sharing them. So emotional expression is one thing, and emotional feelings or emotional depth and certainly emotional intelligence is quite another thing. Very often people who are very expressive of their emotions sometimes don't have emotional depth. In any event, in Parshas Vayichi, this goes back to 2001, Rav Aaron provided a very interesting gloss about Yosef HaTzadik. He prefaced his comments with the recognition and the acknowledgement that the emotional lives of our avos remain very much unexplored. We know much about their activities, less about the emotions they felt when they were taking those activities. Even that statement itself was a powerful statement, that it's not enough to read about these figures and their feats and their accomplishments, but to try to understand their emotional state. He felt that Yosef HaTzadik's emotional state throughout these very windy and stormy parshios could be understood and appreciated by tracing the six different stages at which he cries, which is fascinating that Rav Aaron noted these six different moments of crying and of weeping. It's not something, again, you would think that the prototypical, at least stereotypical, Rav Lichtenstein would know. Maybe he would note Yosef's ideology, his values, his ideas, his Torah. But Rav Aaron noted the six times that Yosef cried. And each of these cries, Rav Aaron associated with a different feeling and a different state of mind. And to be honest, reading the Sicha and remembering the Sicha, some of them are less textually anchored, but obviously Rav Lichtenstein wasn't just operating on a particular pasuk, but of an overall knowledge of these parshios and how the Mefarshim take Yosef in his response, how Chazal see Yosef in his response. The first time he cries is when he first meets the brothers and he hears the brothers processing their guilt. So he turns away and he cries. And Rashi at this point says that Yosef cries because he hears them absorbing and internalizing their guilt. This is a cry that's pivoted or predicated on the break, on the divide, the distance. Yosef sees their guilt. Rav Aaron understood that he wasn't crying because he felt compassion for them processing guilt or felt sorry for them, but he realized the gap and the distance and how they were in different places and the fact that they were reliving their guilt took Yosef back 20 years to the moment of that betrayal and the moment of his sale, and he realized that his life had gone in very different directions and they shared very little in common, but obviously it was a very mild sob. He continues in this entire ruse, presenting himself as an Egyptian viceroy. However, when he sees Binyamin, this is in Mem Gimel, Perek Lamed, Pasuk Lamed, Lamed Aleph, it's a little more intense. He needs to retire to a different room to wash his face, to clear his eyes. This is a little bit different. First of all, he feels actual compassion for Binyamin. This is his brother. He feels unrequited or unconditional love. Binyamin was in no way complicit in his sale. Obviously, they share DNA in ways that the other brothers do not. So this crying is a little more intense. And he's also crying because he feels that the detachment between himself and Binyamin, perhaps between himself and the others, is not just different lives and different trajectories, but he hears that Binyamin's children, and he hears that he's missed out on his brother's life, on a major part of his brother's life, bearing children. So it's a little more intense. Yosef is forced to retire, but he's able to maintain control and return back to this process that he's launched. So Rav Lichtenstein was able to discern between the cry that Yosef emits when he first meets his brothers and hears their guilt and the processing of guilt, and the cry that he emits when he sees Binyamin. Of course, the big cry, the big weeping, takes place in Parshas Vayigash, when Yosef reveals himself to his brothers and the facade is suspended, the facade is dismantled. And Rav Aaron thought, because again, for the brothers, they were shocked, they were mortified, they were speechless. But Yosef already knew who the brothers were. He wasn't shocked by the great reveal. Rav Aaron felt that this was a cry not of estrangement, but of an attempt to reconnect and to reconcile. Sometimes when people cry, they're reaching out, they're looking for contact, they're looking for connection, they're looking for, in this case, a bridge. He's trying to close the gap, and he's trying to make himself seem more human and vulnerable rather than condescending, supercilious, all-powerful. So this is a very, very beautiful cry. It's a plea. It's not even a cry. It's a petition. It's a solicitation. And we have to learn how to interpret people's cries in that fashion, or sometimes we have to allow ourselves to cry when we look for connection or to bridge gaps that have developed or to at least reduce the proportion with which we appear to others. So this was the third episode of Yosef's crying, and it obviously far transcends the previous two cries that were based on distance, heartache, sadness. This is a plea almost, and we'll see whether that plea is successful. The next episode takes place in Perek Mem Vav, Pasuk Chavtes, when Yosef and Yaakov encounter one another. And it's very unclear who cries, Vayipol et Tzavarav, Vayikol et Tzavarav Od. Rashi claims that Yosef was the crier, Yaakov was reciting Kriya Shema, but the Ramban disagrees, and there, at least Rav Lichtenstein felt that the Ramban's position was more appropriate for this sequencing, that Yaakov was crying on Yosef, he was despairing and mourning, but this youthful ruler was standing firm in all of his grandeur, allowing his elderly father, of course, in a very nice and sweet fashion, to cry on his shoulder. But Yosef retains his composure, his poise, his equanimity, and the broken father is finally crying out of this reunification. But in some ways, though Yosef is looking to reconnect with his brothers, he hasn't fully removed the mask. He's still an Egyptian ruler. And to a degree, in his complicated relationship with Yaakov, he's unable to emote as an equal, so to speak, in the way that he did with his brothers. To his brothers, he was looking for the connection. With Yaakov, perhaps he felt the connection was taken for granted. Perhaps he felt that he wanted to demonstrate his accomplishments to his father. But at least according to the Ramban, there's a very stark picture of a father, a broken old father, crying, and a youthful, brazen, but confident ruler refraining from crying, holding his ground. I'll skip the crying at Yaakov's death. Rav Aaron skipped it and returned to it. This is in Perek Nun Pasuk Aleph. Rav Aaron then moved to the fifth cry of Yosef. The first four were the Yosef crying when he sees his brothers, crying when he sees Binyamin, crying when he reveals himself to his brothers, and then crying, or in this case not crying, when he encounters Yaakov. Perhaps the most complicated cry, and this is number five, is the cry when his brothers seek his forgiveness. And they lie to him, and perhaps Yosef understood that this was a lie. They claimed that the father, Yaakov, had instructed Yosef on his deathbed to forgive them, to waive their affront and their crime. But Yosef now has nothing to say, and until now Yosef had been so eloquent and so talkative, and he had steered the conversation, and all he can do is cry. This is a very sad cry. It's a cry that looks back on his life and realizes perhaps misplaced priorities, the price he has paid for his position. He had been a dreamer. He'd been very ambitious. He'd see himself as the leader and the focal point. But now he realizes that for all his ambitions and all his career dreams and all of his public accomplishments, he's really dependent on the rest of his family. His achievements as a leader in no way compensate for this fractured relationship. The futility of power. He's just disconnected from his brothers, and there's not even communication. There's a total and absolute breakdown of trust, and I spoke about this in a different shiur in Hebrew. The lack of trust is actually a medrash that the brothers became suspicious when they saw Yosef returning to Shechem. And Yosef was returning for closure to visit the boar from which he was sold, just to reach some psychological closure, and they thought he was going back to collect evidence, to conspire against them. So there's a breakdown of trust, there's a breakdown of communication, they feel they have to lie to him. So Yosef is crying out of frustration, all of his efforts have failed, and there is no unity to be achieved. And again, it's not just the frustration of an irreparable relationship, but Rav Aaron, as he did so often, warned us against the dangers of unbridled ambition and created a healthy balance between professional public ambitions and family connections and family life. Someone once asked Rav Lichtenstein towards the end of his life, what accomplishment is he most proud of? And you'd think someone that wrote so many svarim and delivered so many shiurim and trained so many talmidim would have ample answers. And he said his proudest accomplishment is his family. And this was a constant, recurring theme in Rav Aaron's teaching about the value of family and just connections with people more significant than leadership and public achievements. Again, something you wouldn't expect from Rav Lichtenstein, but those who knew him well and heard this took this as obvious because we heard it from him so often and repeated it so frequently. And to a degree, that frustration that he had invested Yosef so deeply in professional, political, and public achievements at the cost of his family is acutely displayed in a very, very tragic fashion from this great firm ruler who literally dictated the terms of life and nutrition to an entire world. The end of Parshas Vayigash has to beg and plead with his brothers on his own deathbed to take his bones back. And this is the omnipotent one, the despot who ruled the entire world, has to ask his brothers and beg of them, and this ultimately forces realization of how vulnerable and dependent he really is, and how, to a degree, in some cases through no fault of his own, he had been deprived of the opportunity to build a family relationship. I think Rav Aaron felt that the sixth cry, when Yaakov dies, was less tragic and traumatic, but more reflective on that type of life and what he would no longer enjoy and the lack of a positive relationship with his brothers. He has a willingness to build it, but he's unable to. And he looks back at his life and he feels that sadness in a way that's not as acute as when the brothers lie. That's a very traumatic cry when he realizes that there's absolutely no communication. I think when Yaakov dies, he's just looking back at the life that he led, reflection, a life of distance, a life of social divide, of lack of community, and a life of estrangement and just emotional distance. So it's really a fascinating trajectory or a fascinating timeline which Rav Lichtenstein built. And again, I think a lot of people would not expect such emotional intelligence or depth. That's not something they associate immediately with Rav Lichtenstein, but as I mentioned, which is so obvious in so many of his speeches, and that he was able to take six different moments in Yosef's life, and this isn't even the totality of Yosef's life, this is just Yosef's life from the middle of Miketz through the end of Vayechi, and help us understand Yosef's mind space through the prism, through the lens of Yosef's crying, just taught us different emotional states, different values of professional versus personal and family life, connecting to people, the frustration of lack of trust and lack of communication, the trauma of looking back and realizing erroneous decisions of ours, and the ability to cry, to look for connection and relationships, which Yosef was searching for.